Wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we are grateful that you've chosen to tune in to DLC, your downloadable commentary for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsors this week, Varonis and Squarespace. Squarespace! They are making that possible, bringing DLC to you completely free. DLC, the show, all about gaming in its many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and card. I am your host, Jeff 2N1T Kanata, and I'm joined by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, the guy whose Apple predictions last week were remarkably accurate. So props where props are due, Christian Spicer.
Actually... I'm leaving the show after this episode. I personally have just been sold to Microsoft for $1.75 billion.
Wow. I think you are undervalued.
Yeah, I'll take it, though.
You're worth more to me. You're worth more to me dead, quite frankly. Oh, man. I was pretty shocked about it. We'll get into that. But I couldn't believe that Microsoft was going to pay $2.5 billion for Mahjong. I mean, I love Chinese tile games, but Mahjong? That's pretty... Oh, wait, did I ring that wrong?
Microsoft, to be fair, though, Microsoft is just... Yeah, they're buying Christian Spicer, the company, not the person, Yeah.
Well, we have lots to talk about today, and we're lucky because DLC is your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian, but this week, DLC stands for Dedicated Let's Player and Columnist... Because we've got our returning champion, the deputy reviews editor for Polygon and one of the infamous Twitch stream friends, Mr. Phil Kohler. Welcome, Phil.
Hello. Thank you for having me once again. I don't know how you guys allowed this mistake to happen twice, but yeah. I'm not gonna mention it. I'm gonna roll with the punches. Let's do this.
Mistake or Miss Awesome? I think it's Miss Awesome.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of Phil and everything he does over at Polygon. And honestly, if you're not watching his Twitch stream, you're missing out on one of the most entertaining, almost nightly adventures into ridiculousness. So please check that out. It is awesome.
Thank you, sir.
But we got lots to talk about, big news all over the place. So let's get right into Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, of course, the part of the show where we try to convince one another of the most important stories that happened this week. I have a feeling we'll have a consensus on that one this time. But you, the listener, are always welcome to submit your stories for our consideration all week long using the hashtag DLCSOTW or visiting our subreddit over at reddit.com/r/5x5DLC. Lots of people submitted lots of stories this week, but one rose above them all. And I'm curious, Phil, if you will consider that your story of the week because you get first pick. So what do you got?
Yeah, I mean, listen, this is not just story of the week. This is almost certainly story of the year. Maybe story of the generation. This is huge news. Microsoft is buying Mahjong, as you wisely called it in the intro. They're buying Minecraft. Let's be real.
Yeah, right.
Microsoft is buying Minecraft for $2.5 billion. The rumors started hitting late last week, like Thursday-ish. And it seemed crazy. It seemed unbelievable to a lot of people. But then today we found out it is true. It is happening. It has happened. It's official. Microsoft has purchased Mojang, the developer of Minecraft. But really, they're purchasing Minecraft. I mean, we can all agree on that, right?
Yeah, I think that that's definitely the case. But I think equally important in this story is, from Microsoft's perspective, they're getting Minecraft. But also, Notch, the creator of Minecraft, I think this is as much his story of golden parachuting out of this company as anything else. I mean, it really is his exit from being involved in Minecraft in any significant way or in any way at all, really. And it seems like something that's been a long time in coming as well.
Did you read the blog post that he put up?
I did. I saw your story over at Polygon as well. I think it is indicative of a lot of these stories that have been coming up recently about these creators of small games when they become huge and cultural, just watershed games. It's a little overwhelming for these guys. And I think that for him, while I'm sure he enjoys the monetary success and all those things, it's a burden in a lot of ways. It's a lot of responsibility to have something that is as significant as Minecraft.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you know, he that's made clear in the blog post where he basically says, I'm going to keep doing video game stuff, but I just want to make weird small games. And I think he actually says, if any of them end up like gaining traction, I'm probably just going to abandon them immediately.
Right. Yeah.
Like he doesn't want the pressure of dealing with a Minecraft size hit.
Yeah. And it's, I guess, you know, you can be cynical and say it's easy to say once you've got all the money you could ever possibly spend in your life, you don't have to worry about those kinds of things. You don't have to worry about making a hit anymore. And I'm sure that he wouldn't, you know, give that back in any sense, but there is something to this overwhelming, intense spotlight that is, I don't think has always been the case. In the age of the internet, in the age of information, the way we have it, these creators are in that spotlight in a much harsher way than I think ever before. And I'm not saying shed a tear for these guys. He's certainly making out very, very well for himself, but it is something to consider, I think.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. Some people in the chat are also, I saw someone say that they thought Minecraft was past its prime. That's a McFizzticuffs. Mm-hmm. And saying, I don't understand how this makes business sense for them. I would argue, I've heard this said by a lot of people, that, you know, what's incredible about Minecraft is not only that it has lasted so long and has stayed as popular as it has, because it's still very popular, but it has a very young user base.
Right.
It's really popular among kids and among teenagers. And I think that's a crowd that Microsoft actively wants to court, and that those people aren't necessarily going to hear Microsoft buys Minecraft and be like, well, it's not cool anymore because the man owns it. They don't really care about that necessarily.
I don't even think they'll be aware of it. You know, it's sort of
exactly
happening in the adult world that's beyond them.
Reginald 14 says Minecraft is the Legos of video games that will always be around. I think it's definitely along those lines. I've heard some people say that Minecraft is this generation's Mario. And
yeah,
I think there's a very strong argument to be made there.
Yeah, this, you know, for us old folks, this might seem like what a waste of money, but I mean this is huge. And whether it's a business, you know, works out in the long run as the right or wrong move for Microsoft is yet to be told. But
well, let me just jump in real quick and say there's a post on IGN's site that says, according to an investor relations release from Microsoft, they expect to break even on their acquisition of Mojang by the end of June 2015.
Well, sure, but whether or not that plays out, of course they expect, you know what I mean? Yeah, they had analysts do research that said that this makes sense for them. I mean, I think a lot of the money in this is in merchandising and you know, all of that, you know, that avenue. It's a huge, huge, huge brand, but I mean, this is massive. Like, whatever you think the most your favorite video game of all time is, or your favorite video game series of all time is, you know, Microsoft owns it now. I mean, Minecraft is your favorite video game series times 100. It's just, we don't understand how huge this is. And further putting it into perspective, the big hubbubaloo for my old fogey generation was when Microsoft bought Rare. How could they? They stole them from Nintendo. Oh my gosh. They bought Rare in 2002 for $375 million.
Chump change.
Exactly. Yeah, it was like, we'll take that. This is massive. I do, now the cynic in me, I think, Phil, this will be a bigger thing, having Microsoft locked it down. I don't think, unfortunately, Microsoft has a great track record for keeping things open and accessible and fun. I mean, Minecraft is huge on iOS. And, you know, if I owned it, would you, you know, or Microsoft, would you, you know, lock it behind Windows 8 or whatever, right? Or
yeah.
I don't know if
they've said they won't.
I don't think they'll make those steps quite. I don't think they'll make them quickly, at least. I think they'll look very carefully and try and figure out, like, what are we going to, especially having paid as much as they have. I think they're going to be very careful about taking a look and deciding, like, what platforms can we keep this on to continue making money off of?
I hope so. I just don't know if they have a great track record. I mean, do you think, so let's hypothesize, right? Let's you know, jerk around at the crystal ball a little bit. I mean, mm-hmm. are we going to see annualized releases of Minecraft, like actual retail releases? Or let's limit ourselves to the next year to 2 years, right? In that range. What do we think will change, if anything? And then if you do think there will be a change, just quickly, you know, in short sentences, what do you think that change will be? I'm happy to go first, but I'm also happy to pitch to Phil or Jeff, whoever wants to take it.
I'm going to just, Tondagosa in the chat says, Windows 9 Minecraft Edition, then hashtag Ninecraft. Boom.
Ninecraft.
Ninecraft. I think that Microsoft will do something in the next, in less than 2 years, that will mess up what's great about Minecraft. And I don't know if it's locking it behind their version of an Origin or a Steam or something like that, or a Windows mobile store, or and somehow gimping the PC version of it unintentionally by trying to create parity between it and the Xbox One version more so, or limiting expansions and able to tinker with it. And I think it's going to be in some way unintentional. I think it will be good natured, but I think in some way, my prediction is Microsoft will close a wall or put walls around the freedom.
You mean they'll like build them brick by brick up around? Is that what you're kind of the same,
yeah, exactly.
What you're saying?
They're going to mine for them over the next year. Hide during the night, and then
Microsoft currently has hundreds of employees mining out the iron they will need to build these walls.
Yes, to build these walls, and then it will take a great president who was once an actor to demand Microsoft to tear down these walls. That's my prediction. I don't know if you guys have anything.
I completely disagree. I think they would be fools to do that.
Oh, me too.
And I think that they're smart enough. I think this is comparable to the Facebook acquisition of Oculus. I think this is a big company wanting to be in that game, but recognizing that that game needs to happen on its own. Like, yes, Notch is out, but everybody else, I think, is probably going to be able to run that company fairly autonomously. And, you know, they may muck it up. They may get in there and screw around with things and say, hey, you can only play it on Microsoft consoles. I just don't understand why they would want to, you know, cut their nose to spite their face. You know,
As the Brawny Man points out, like, their streaming policy isn't exactly for the people right now. And will that impact what makes Minecraft so great?
There's so many facets to this. Yes, I think that's one of them. The other I was thinking is, has there ever been a Microsoft published game on a Sony platform? You know, that's pretty crazy. The idea that they, even if they don't want to lock it down, maybe Sony goes, hey, we don't want your Microsoft product on our platform. I don't see that happening either, but it's certainly in the realm of possibility.
I'll actually take kind of the middle ground here in that I'm not necessarily willing to say that they're going to screw it up or that they're not going to screw it up. I kind of agree with both of the points that both of you are making.
What I will say though is
if there's anybody who can figure out a way to screw up Minecraft, it's probably Microsoft. They can probably figure out something. They've got people on it, and I think they could figure it out if they wanted to.
Yeah. I also like on Twitter, at Dolly Dimovsky said, Minecraft Soft is the name of the new company.
Sure.
So I dig that. I don't know. I don't think this is all doom and gloom. Everybody thinks big corporation buying small thing is instantly doom and gloom. I don't see that. But I also definitely sympathize with the other thing you brought up from the chat room, Phil, is the gild off the lily on this? Are we past its prime? Are they jumping in just at the point when Microsoft is sort of cresting, you know, and it's headed downhill?
Minecraft is cresting.
What did I say?
Microsoft.
I mean, yeah, well,
both.
Freudian slip.
It's interesting because, you know, we are talking directly about them buying Minecraft, but they did buy Mojang as a company And I think that's one of the interesting things that a lot of people haven't discussed is there anything else to Mojang besides Minecraft? You know, like, I know they were working on Scrolls.
No.
And that seems kind of cool, but like, are they ever going to create anything that's even not even like up to Minecraft standards, because that's not going to happen, but you know, anything that's a hit beyond Minecraft?
Yeah.
Or is Microsoft just going to say to them like, no, Minecraft's your job now, just do that?
Well, I could see them maybe putting the company name on other games, but what surprised me about this deal is, I mean, typically a lot of these deals will have a holding arrangement for, you know, the leads of the company to stick around.
Oh, yeah.
And this deal was expressly, here's our company, me and the top three dudes and people at this company, we're out immediately. Like, that's shocking to me. I mean, that's often not the case, right? You're buying the company and you want to keep that talent around to ease the transition, or, you know, you have to stay for 2 years kind of thing, and your interest in this purchase won't vest for 18 months or whatever it is. And this is, you bought it, we're out, have fun. I mean,
well,
I could,
that's
I
not
could
entirely accurate. The guy who's been running the Minecraft game, whose name I will only mispronounced, he's staying. He tweeted out he's still in charge. He's still making that game. He's still in there. But yes.
Right.
One of my favorite responses to this news last week, when the rumors first popped up, it was Jeff Gerstmann of Giant Bomb over on Twitter says, "I bet Mojang could make a ton of really great avatar clothing." Really sad.
Yeah. 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 There's been a lot of wonderful, wonderful, snarky comments of what this could do, and I get that. I get the cynicism, especially in light of Rare, as you brought up, Christian. And I, you know, and we're seeing this. We're seeing all these big companies, and you know, in a lot of ways, you could say it's sort of like Microsoft swooping in and buying Zynga. You know, it's like, oh yeah, Farmville is this awesome cultural phenomenon. It'll never go away. And it's like, you know, and then Zynga crashes right after. This didn't happen, but you could see it being similar to that, of like buying it at a certain time. And there's no way that nobody will want to play this, and it will always make money for us. I just think Minecraft is in a different place. And as Phil, you brought up in bringing up the story, this is Pac-Man, you know, for my generation. And then the generation after mine, it's Mario. And then the generation
after, it's on a completely different level. Like when you look at major YouTube stars, and you're like, oh man, some of the people who are making the most money, who have the most subscribers on YouTube, are people making game content. And then you look, and a lot of those top people making game content are making Minecraft videos, and they've been making Minecraft videos for like 5 years, and that's it. It's a phenomenon on a level that I think a lot of people who are really into the hardcore gaming space don't even realize how huge it is.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because it's playing to kids, and I think anybody that has kids goes, we get it, because it's all our kids look at. And you know, we've talked about that a lot on this show before too, is that Minecraft is forming the gaming brains of an entire generation of kids. They're going to grow up being completely obsessed with this game and have that cultural touchstone across their generation. So any other kid that they meet when they're in college, what they're going to reminisce about is Minecraft. And if they can maintain the relevance of that game, and because it isn't something that you play from start to finish and then you're done and you wait for the sequel, because it is this sandbox that goes on forever, there's a potential there for it to be long lasting and to evolve and continue to be something that they will be playing in college. So, you know,
Minecraft 2 coming to Xbox One 2015. Boom.
There you go. Yeah, it's an investment in a platform more than it is just buying a game or any company, I think.
Totally. And there is positive in this for sure. Yeah, it's easy to be cynical and have, you know, 140 characters that are snarky about this. But one, you got to give props to Microsoft for announcing this before we recorded DLC. Like, that is huge. And we have to thank them for that.
And that two, almost never happens.
That almost never happens. Two, I mean, people were dogging on Microsoft and the Xbox One being, you know, a failed launch, and they got to do something to step up into the game, and they don't have any exclusive studios anymore, and Sony has, you know, still has internal studios. And nope. I mean, this is calling their shot. This is Babe Ruth at the plate saying, here we go. And, you know, that that takes some balls. That's awesome. That's what you want to see companies doing, and hopefully it works out for everyone in the long run. But, you know, that's pretty cool to see this company be like, here we go, we're going in, and we're going in a big freaking way. So I don't think it's all doom and gloom.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty insane the amounts that we're seeing for, you know, Twitch going for $1 billion, Oculus going, I don't remember how much Oculus went for, but it was up there too. This company going for $2.5 billion. These prices, I think, are all across the board kind of inflated, but it's insane. It's insane that what we're seeing is all of these companies that started very, very small with very, very small teams. I mean, this isn't none of these things that I've listed have started out being these giant, ambitious projects. They've all just sort of started in garages and exploded, and then these giant corporations see the value in them.
Let me ask one question and then a follow-up to that question. How much do you think that DLC is going to be sold for? Like the podcast that we're on right now, DLC. And then do I get a cut of that also?
Well, definitely you would get a cut as one of the... You were in our 9th episode ever, so I think you're in on the ground floor there. Great. So, yes. And I think, you know, Twitch, $2 billion... Minecraft 2.5 billion. I think we're at least in the like $14.75 is what I was going with.
Yeah.
I think we're at least there.
Jeff and I have talked off air, and we both decided there's no way, like, we have principles, and there's no way that we're going to sell DLC, the brand in which that is owned by 5x5 and, you know, not us anyway.
Right.
But there's no way that we'd be willing to sell for anything less than $10, like a Starbucks per person, black coffee.
Come on,
it's important to have principles. And yeah.
I just said $14.75. I just said $14.75, and
I'm sorry.
In at $10.
No.
This is why we're destined to fail, Christian.
Dang it. Okay, let me. I'm sorry. I'll as long as I get $5. Is that I'm okay? Oh, that's lower still. Dang it. Oh no.
Javelin Robin says no gold, just parachutes.
We can't even afford parachutes. We get like a paper napkin and a rubber band, and hopefully that'll glide us to the ground safely.
Well, hey, you want to know how you can help this show? So support our sponsor. How's that for a five?
Yeah,
just give me $5.
Let's go right to that.
Give me $5.
How about talking about my Varonis? They are the people that have given us our parachute, be that as it may. And we're grateful for their support. We hope you support them. Varonis.anywhere is the fastest way to turn your own network shares into a Dropbox-like, secure, enterprise-class private cloud. You get mobile access, file synchronization, and secure third-party sharing. Give your users file sync and mobile access without changing your IT infrastructure, without moving your data, and without even reconfiguring permissions. It's so easy. You know your file shares are secured, backed up, and reliable. Why change everything or move terabytes of files to the cloud when you can simply sync directly with your existing storage? You'll keep your data on existing file servers. You keep your existing permissions. You monitor and control access to the files. And you can set up rules to control access and remotely wipe devices should the need arise. You can sync with Windows, Mac OS X, OS 10. I know what I'm talking about. iOS and Android. And you can safely share files with third parties without adding them to the Active Directory. It installs in about 30 minutes, so it's super fast and easy. And we'll give you 30 days with an unlimited amount of users faux free. And as a special bonus to our listeners, if you go to varonis.com/DLC, that's V-A-R-O-N-I-S, varonis.com/DLC, you can get 5 users for free forever. So beyond that 30 days where you get an unlimited amount of users, if you sign up by going to varonis.com/DLC, we'll give you 5 users free forever, and you let Varonis know that it's a good idea to support this show and allow Christian and I and Phil, when he's here, our meager parachutes. Again, varonis.com/DLC. Check it out. And we appreciate them supporting the show. So, guys, there is other news to discuss. This is a megaton, crazy, crazy town type of stuff. But there is other news this week. So, Christian, is there anything that you wanted to throw in as a potential story of the week?
Yes. What I think is cool, and you can read more about it at this website called polygon.com. It's weird. It's a website that talks about things. I don't know if you guys, Phil, I don't know if you've been there, but it's okay. They do stuff. The White House Game Jam. I think that links in perfectly with Minecraft sales. And I think it's super cool that the White House is getting behind it. Obama in 2011 talked about wanting to focus more on, you know, getting real educational games out there, compelling educational games, and whether or not that is, I think sometimes when you try to make an educational game, it often can miss the mark versus a game like Minecraft, where I don't think Notch was like, how can I make this educational? I need to, you know what I mean? But obviously okay. People are learning.
But I punch think, trees.
Yeah, that's taking out aggression in a helpful way for society. Those stupid trees. I think this is cool. And I hope that, you know, whoever our next president is, things like this are continued, because I do think learning programming and getting involved in programming and making programming and developing a big focus. I think it was Cliffy B tweeted out a couple of years ago that, you know, learning programming is the most important thing a kid can do today. And while I don't know programming, I, you know, when I was growing up, it was learn a second language, and I learned French. Worthless. Absolutely worthless. Learn coding. Get involved in game jams. Support creating cool things. And I like seeing the authority, so to speak, supporting games before for so long, and you still see these stories, but it's games are evil. Games are rotting kids' minds. Games are this, that, and the other. And there's so much more to it. And that's why I'm glad. And the White House has done other gaming initiatives too, but I think this was really cool, you know. And
I'm just surprised that you didn't enjoy your time at the French jam that you went to as a kid. And you were like, everybody had baguettes and you were all smoking. It was, wasn't it great?
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest though. If you have a good croissant, you don't need much jam, because there's already, it's total sidebar. When you see people adding butter to a croissant, please know how disgusting that is, because croissants are 90% butter. That's neither here nor there.
But if you can push that up to like 95%.
You knock it out of their hand. You knock it out of their hand. You're like, you don't know what you're doing.
Right. Yeah.
See, you have life lessons that you learned at the French jam. Come on. this is very important.
And so while this story is by no means as mind-blowing as Microsoft purchasing Minecraft, you know, I think it's cool, and I think it just involved, I wanted to raise awareness to it, people that haven't seen it, and you can check out some of these games. USA Today had an article about it, and then Polygon has a nice write-up on it with trailers for some of the games that you can check out. And it's cool, and it's interesting, and so I just kind of wanted to, have either of you ever been to a jam? Like a game jam?
No, I've been to a happening
game jam, but
sitting.
Over...
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, speaking a dumb joke. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I've never been to a game jam, but I have over on Stream Friends, twitch.tv/StreamFriends. We have done a couple of game jam streams where when a jam is finished, we just do a stream where we, you know, spend like 5 or 10 minutes with a bunch of different games from that jam. And I think they're a lot of fun. Like it's a great place. It's a great thing for exploring really interesting ideas that wouldn't necessarily make great full games. But then sometimes they get turned into full games too, which is awesome.
Yeah. I think that this news story definitely shows that someone that works for the White House is cool. There's someone there who's like, guys, I have this little idea. You've probably never heard of anything like this, but maybe I can make my little pet project here. Can we maybe push this through?
If we say yes, will you go away?
Sure, I'll go over here and play games. Yeah, super cool. I agree. It's great to encourage science and technology in this kind of way, and recognize that making games is educational, is worthwhile. Kudos. And I agree. Great story to bring up, Christian. Once in a while, you really do bring something valuable to the show, and I appreciate that.
Hey, like the whole show next week? Cool, you're welcome.
some other stuff that I wanted to bring up. We got confirmation that GTA 5 is coming out for next-gen consoles and PC, PS4, Xbox One on November 18th, and PC on January 27th, because, hey, PC, who cares, right? Who cares if it's after Christmas? And we got a new trailer. We got graphics BMO beta. We got plus one to graphics, plus one to, we got new weapons, we got new vehicles, we got new wildlife. People have been clamoring for more wildlife in this, GTA 5. Finally,
Did I hear you say Oculus? I don't understand what you're talking about.
No, I didn't say that. Well, this isn't my story of the week. I just wanted to bring it up.
Perfect. Okay, this is where Jeff lists everything else.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, good. Yeah, great.
So, and the cool thing is, if you're an online GTA online player on PS3 or 360, you can transfer your online character over to the Xbox One or PS4 or Windows versions of the game, which is, that's pretty rad. Yeah, and it looks real pretty. Do you think it's going to sell well, Phil? You think this people have been waiting to play it, or do you think it's kind of too late?
I think it will do fine. I think there are a lot of people who have next-gen systems and don't have a ton of games for them yet, and maybe some of those people bought their next-gen systems instead of getting GTA, and now that there's a new version of GTA, they're gonna definitely grab that. Personally speaking, I'm excited for the PS4 and Xbox One version, but I'm really excited for the PC version, because mm-hmm. I want to see all the weird mods. I don't know if you guys have seen some of the insane mods that people have done for GTA 4 on PC.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
just
awesome.
Some of the weirdest stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. And yeah, on the PC, the GTA community is crazy and inventive and committed. And it just sucks that we have to wait all the way until January to let them start messing with that game. Because that sandbox with that graphics engine, it's just going to be really, really cool to see what people come up with.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
Okay, Christian, you teased it. So Jeff's VR excitement of the week story. this falls under the heading of rumor, but evidently techradar.com says that they've got sources, unnamed sources, that say the Oculus may be releasing some sort of consumer version as early as April 2015, which is crazy, and that they're going to kind of roll it out Google Glass style, where you need an invite to be able to buy it, and then it's all going to be happening by the summer of next year. They say it's going to cost between $200 and $400, which is kind of what I would expect, I guess, and that it's going to be really cool. It's going to be significantly increased visual fidelity, higher resolution, 1080p displays with a refresh rate of 90 hertz or higher. Again, this is still just a rumor, but I did not expect this kind of stuff to be happening that soon. And I will be so excited if that's the case, because we've already seen the developer kit kind of treated with such excitement and so many people developing things for it. To have this sort of Google Glass style rollout, I think it'll actually work better than the Google Glass did, because I think there'll be much more stuff to do with it and more people putting out software that'll make it worthwhile. Phil, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm not in on the whole VR trend yet.
Really?
I have not really tried any of this stuff. I have coworkers who are obsessed with it. I know that you're really into it, Jeff. But it just hasn't. I haven't seen anything that's like pulled me in yet. That said, I think this is what I'm waiting for. I think I'm waiting for the actual like consumer models where we're going to be able to start actually getting legitimate releases on it, if that makes sense.
Right.
I want to see what actual games are going to come out for this thing and what actual experiences are going to be put out there for people to actually pay money for.
Christian, do you buy that this could happen this early, or you think this is a false rumor?
I think it could happen this early. I mean, one, I think it's early only in the sense that we thought it would take even longer, but I mean, it's still a year. You know what I mean? Like that's a long time away. And, the improvement you saw we've seen from DevKit 1 to DevKit 2 is pretty significant. And DevKit 2, I mean, honestly, if DevKit 2 with just like a little nicer housing, an actual head strap system, came out, I could see that being the a first gen consumer model. I think DevKit 2 is pretty impressive. And I don't see why this couldn't happen, especially that they have billions of Facebook dollars helping make this be the case. And that, you know, the Samsung version is coming out as consumer tech, which I know is largely relies on the Note 4. I believe it's the Note 4. But they're working on this. Like, what else is Oculus doing, right? So I wouldn't be surprised if this does come out. Why not? Especially if it's a limited release like this. It's not going to be go to Best Buy, go to Walmart and buy it. It's, we have a few available. They'll probably be available first to, you know, be cool if they gave Kickstarter backers first crack at it and then DevKit purchasers and then, you know, random.
Well, do you guys think that's the way to do this? I kind of feel like Google Glass ruined their opportunity to be cool by making it this elitist thing. You know, I think Oculus will be a little different because you're not going to see people out in the wild, like going into clubs wearing an Oculus. It's all still just going to be at people's homes or whatever. But I don't know if this is the best way to make it feel like there's a cool kid in group that you can't be a part of that has it.
I think it's sort of the same problem, the same challenge that the Wii U faced when it launched, right? Where Nintendo had trouble explaining to people why this is cool, because you kind of needed to get your hands on it to figure that out.
Yeah,
I think Oculus needs to actually be like setting up stuff in like Best Buys and
kiosks,
GameStops, and like I think there needs to be a place for people to try this, because right now I think so much of what we're hearing about VR is just coming from tech and games journalists who have tried it at a bunch of events, or maybe they own the current model and are obsessed with it. But for the average consumer, the average gamer, I don't think they've tried it. I don't think they know what VR is like.
Yeah.
I think they need to actually have a way to get their hands on it to be convinced that it's worth buying.
Well, maybe in that sense, this is a good marketing strategy, in the sense that it'll be word of mouth, that it'll be people who have it will be like, oh my gosh, they'll be the proselytizers for it. That could work. What do you guys think about the price tag? Is between $200 and $400? Is that, I have a feeling it'll be more at the higher end of that spectrum than the lower, but is like $350 pricing out that market, or do you think that's doable?
I mean, I think it's realistic. You know what I mean? No, ideally, tech comes in at $99, right? I mean, that's typically what the cheapest iPhone is until they do it free, or before, you know, a lot of the, obviously you can get free phones everywhere when you sign up for a 2-year plan and stuff like that. But $99 has long been talked about for consoles. When like PlayStation 2 or PlayStation 1 hit $99, it hit mainstream. Apple TV, $99, that and under. But to think that this thing would come out at $99 is ridiculous. And it's, I think $350 is, for me, is like, whoa, that's expensive, but not like punch me in the face. That's a stupid price. I'm never going to get one, kind of, you know what I mean? I think $399, I think is high, but like if they hit $350, that's kind of on the high end of my, I'll tell my wife that if she bought this for me for my birthday, I would be like, well, you're the best. but definitely it's a save up for and get thing, not, you know, oh, what the heck?
Impulse buy.
It's 1 a.m. I'll buy an Oculus.
Yeah. Well, I stayed up till 1 a.m. to buy a new iPhone, and it was $399 or whatever. So,
which I do want to talk about those a little bit. Spoiler alert. I know it's not listed here, but I do want to talk about the Apple releases a smidge in terms of gaming stuff too.
Well, let's do that. Unless, Phil, did you want to weigh in on price here on the Oculus?
Yeah, I mean, for me, again, the concern is just like, I want to see what games are coming out for it and what experiences you can actually purchase. But I do also think it's different than a regular like console or a handheld coming out to some degree, because there's something about the experience of VR in and of itself that I think adding to the price tags for some people will not be a big deal.
Right.
They'll be like, it's worth it because I get to do this weird, cool thing that's like the future.
Well, speaking of the future, we got these new iPhones roll out. The biggest piece of software that they showed when the iPhone 6 was debuted was a video game, and they showed a whole list of gaming partners that they've got for the new iPhones. And they showed a MOBA that was really the only piece of software that they demoed for the new hardware. And it's supposed to have a much better graphics processor. So, Christian, what did you want to talk about specifically with regard to iPhone?
Yeah, what I think is interesting about these devices is how, like you said, they positioned them really up front. And Apple has done this before as gaming devices. There was an iPod Touch that launched, you know, and the ad campaign for that a couple of years ago was about how it's great for gaming. But what they touted first and foremost with these new phone is how it's these great games, right? And how it's the bigger screen. And yes, I know Android phones have had bigger screens for a while. And I'm not saying Apple is a genius for coming out with the bigger screen phone. But I think it's interesting how Apple leans more and more into the gaming space, which right before they had Epic on stage demoing Epic Citadel and talking about the chair developed game that I'm blanking on right now, but we all know what I'm talking about. And it's interesting the way that goes. And then even with the watch, while they walked through other features of the watch, one of the first press releases they put out is about game companies, developing gamification for the watch, and EA talking about how they're looking into creating watch-specific games. And I think it's interesting. And then from a, slap your face, silly perspective was if you were following along some of the live streams where people were tweeting at the event were saying things like, it's official. Apple has created a phone with better graphics than Xbox or Sony are capable of. And, I've never seen anything this amazing before in my life. Gamers have arrived, which is just, you're an idiot. But like for you, so I personally did not pre-order. For me, I think I'm out of that loop now where I use my phone for email, navigation, Twitter, Facebook, that kind of thing. And this device didn't seem compelling enough for me. And I'm wondering for you, Phil, if you pre-ordered, and Jeff, I know you did, was gaming on your phone part of that purchasing decision for you? Or was it just newest, latest, best, need to have it?
Well, for me, it's not about gaming. I don't really game on my phone very much. I game on my iPad a lot, but I don't game on my phone. And mostly that's about battery life. Now they're saying battery life better here, especially if you get the big one, which I did not. But I don't really have a phone or upgrade my phone specifically to have better games on it. I don't know about what you think, Phil.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not an iPhone guy. I'm an Android guy. So partially because of that, but also just because I never have. I also don't game on my phone. I'm in basically the exact same camp as you, Jeff. I game on my iPad a lot. If I'm just laying in bed or lounging around my apartment and don't feel like turning on a console, that's where I'm going to do my like casual gaming, not on my phone so much.
Yeah, I am intrigued by this announcement that EA has got two teams prototyping wearable experiences, gaming experiences on the watch. I think that is kind of interesting. I mean, the first game that will be out on it is this arm wrestling thing, which to me sounds ridiculous because just arm wrestle. If you want to arm wrestle, just arm wrestle. You don't need to have a piece of electronics telling you to arm wrestle. But I am intrigued by what that can bring and what it can add to certain experiences. I mean, there's already really cool, I can't remember the name of it. It just jumped out of my head, but there's this really cool MMO where you have to go to physical places in the world and take over these alien strongholds.
Oh, yeah, it's Google developed.
What's it called? I can't remember.
Come on, chat, help us out. Yeah, I played it once.
I know what you're talking about as well.
Those kinds of things, when you've got a watch on, I think are even have a potential of being even more integrated into your life because you don't have to fish your phone out. And, like geocaching and stuff with the watch, while that isn't
Ingress.
Technically a game. Yeah, Ingress. Thank you, Space Bob, in the chat. While that isn't technically a game, I think geocaching with the watch could be cool. Or, I think there are interesting experiences. And as the interview with the head of EA's mobile game division points out, they're not just talking about games that only exist on the watch. They're talking about games that exist on your phone, but then have a watch component that's additive. I think that's kind of neat. Or using the fitness tracker to, add an element to the game that is interesting. I like these outside the box kinds of ideas. Sometimes they're gimmicky, but I think they can be cool.
Yeah, and I think, you know, more and more, as we have all of these devices, and while the watch is, you know, all the information isn't out on it, but it seems very limited or, you know, connected to the phone. But if we get in this world, this future where everything is connected, your phone and your watch, your VR headset, your computer, your TV, and I think that's when we start getting into some really, really cool experiences. I mean, is two iWatches or, you know, whatever, Apple Watches or some device like that, that you're going to have anyway, the way that brings your hands into VR, because instead of holding two Move controllers, like Morpheus is set up, you have these things already that can track with your VR headset. And if you have all this gear anyway, where it's, you know, we're becoming cyborgs, and some of it is pretty exciting. And what is it, the haptic touch, the way the watch notifies you? I think you could have cool games with, or, you know, gaming aspects and things. And I think the bigger thing that we've seen for years now, and Android has certainly been doing this too, but is the gamification of everyday activities, right? I mean, the fitness apps on these things, and with the Nike Sport Band and stuff like that, and Fitbit, is, those are games. You know what I mean? You're seeing leaderboards, you're competing with friends, right. And you, as you forward and put more and more of that information up front in a way that's seen and fun and shareable, you know, I think if you get someone experiencing a leaderboard with their friends with their Fitbit or their Fuel Band or their Apple Watch or whatever, then if they sit down to play Geometry Wars 3 and it has the same thing, they're hooked on that competitive nature already, and it's just getting gaming into everyday situations. And I love stuff like that. I think it's great.
A couple other stories I wanted to hit on, one of which is... spoiler alert, still my game of the year right at this moment, Divinity Original Sin, selling well. They sold 500,000 units. This was submitted by @BladeOfCreation on Twitter. Thank you for pointing that out to me. And they've hit break-even status. They're doing real well in the game, and I just wanted to kind of high-five because I love that game, and I hope people are checking it out. It's a really cool throwback to a golden age of role-playing games as far as I'm concerned.
And Jeff can't Jeff, buy another 500,000 copies, so someone else needs to.
Yeah,
Jeff, I'm totally with you. That's my game of the year so far as well. And it's so fantastic to see it doing so well. One of the things that was interesting about that, just from a behind the scenes at a website perspective, is I reviewed this for Polygon, and it's one of those games where it's so big that, and we only got it like, I don't know, maybe 3 days before it came out. Mm-hmm. So my review didn't go up until the game had been out for probably almost a month.
Wow.
And that's usually a bad sign for us. Usually that's like, wow, that, you know, we're not going to get much traffic on this. But I think this is a game that was so much driven by word of mouth. And my review went up and we got a ton of traffic on it. And it was so good to see people caring about this game. It seems like it has really taken off, and it's really been... driven by word of mouth and driven in this really natural way that you don't see that often anymore.
Yeah, I love seeing it. It's great. Yeah.
Apparently there's a new DLC as well. Somebody in the chat is linking.
What? I didn't know about that.
Two new companions. Oh, yeah.
Ozzy nice. Has the link in there. Cool.
Sweet. Another bit of a sad story that happened this week I wanted to take note of. The creator of Lode Runner, Douglas E. Smith, passed away this week. Lode Runner was a big game for me when I was a kid. A lot of people listening to this probably don't remember it, although it was re-released in an updated version on Xbox Live Arcade a couple years ago. Anyway, this came out in 1983. This was a game I played for hours and hours and hours. It was a massive hit at the time and really kind of influenced, well, not kind of, it really influenced a lot of games in its wake. Were you guys Lode Runner fans?
Not particularly. Just never. It never was special for me.
All right.
Well. Yeah. Never. No. It was a little before my time. Like just enough that it never clicked for me.
Well, great game from the past, and a sad sad day to note the passing of its creator. All right. Let's move on to the playlist. Ooh, The playlist is the part of the show where we talk about what we're playing that's on our playlist. It's also the part of the show we like hearing from you. You can call in and let us know what's on your playlist by calling 512-518-5714. I have a feeling a lot of our playlists will be similar because this, of course, is the week that DLC means Destiny Loves Company. Destiny hit, and everybody's been playing it. Phil, you have a you are one half of a very, let's say, impactful review on Polygon, a lot of which I agree with. But for people that haven't maybe read that yet, tell me what your take is on Destiny.
Destiny really disappointed me.
Yeah.
I really wanted to like Destiny, and there are moments when I was playing it that I did really like it. But overall, it left me feeling very lukewarm. And I was very disappointed by that.
Yeah. So, you know, I have to agree a lot in that. I think this is an example of a game that's more fun than it is good. One of my friends texted me and said, "Hey man, should I buy Destiny?" And I responded with, "It's the most fun I've ever had with a very mediocre game. There is so much to criticize, and I'm actually shocked that the game was released in its current state. It feels like a rough draft of a game. Yeah. It doesn't feel like a full, this amazing company that puts out these amazing games. And yet, having said all that, it's extraordinarily fun when you're playing with your friends. It's extremely fun. But it's got lots of flaws.
I don't know how many times, I feel like I'm going to need to keep saying it this generation, and maybe it's me just justifying and providing excuses for these games and big game companies. But one, yes, Bungie has made several other games before, but this is still Destiny 1. Two, I think the big problem, maybe I'm Destiny Defense Force. Two, I think the big problem for this game, while Bungie certainly shares some of the blame for how they presented it and talked about it and, you know, put it in the media or whatever, but it's just people's expectations. And you can go back and listen to old episodes of this show. I'm too lazy to pull the episode numbers for you, but I know they're out there. Where, like, after the alpha and beta came out, if you listen to people on this show, except for me because I'm smart and not an idiot, and other gaming podcasts, people were talking about the alpha and beta being great, but how they're excited to see, oh my god, but the main game, I can't wait to see how much the different, the game, it's the same freaking game. And people just had these ungodly expectations, like, oh man, I played through the beta for 20 hours and I loved every second of it, but I just hope the main game opens up a little bit. Are you stupid? Do you think they're going to release a beta that's like a snapshot of a thing? People put so much pressure on this freaking game, and then when it came out as the game that everyone knew it was, what did you expect the full game would be? All of a sudden, it comes out and hugs you at night.
No, come on. Now let's ramp that back a notch.
I will not. I'm ramped up
because yes, we got to play the first 8 levels of a game that one would expect progresses beyond its first 8 levels.
Why Borderlands doesn't?
Well, Borderlands is Diablo a far superior doesn't. Product to Destiny in almost
Diablo
every way.
Doesn't change after the first 8 levels?
Well
Halo
doesn't change after the first 8 levels.
Go ahead, Phil.
My argument would be that something like Diablo or Borderlands, it does what Destiny is doing. Those games both do what Destiny is doing far better. In fact, I think I'm not even a huge Borderlands fan, but in retrospect, after playing Diablo, I think Borderlands looks better because it has so much more content. There's so many more areas. There's so much more life to the world in Borderlands.
And it feels big.
The progression of loot, which is a really hard thing to get right, but I think that's something that both Diablo and Borderlands do really brilliantly, is you're constantly getting tons of loot, and you're constantly feeling like you are getting upgrades at a pace that feels right. And one of the biggest problems for me with Destiny is loot drops in general are very rare, and upgrades came very rarely.
Yeah, I don't understand how they put out a product like this. I don't understand how, like, I get my enthusiasm for the first 8 levels was on the expectation that, okay, I did this kind of thing in the early part of the game, and now you're going to give me variations on that, not the exact same thing over and over again. I mean, I'm shocked that in every mission, I am plugging my little my little ghost robot into the thing and then defending him. And I do that over and over and over. And that's not how Halo is. I think there is more epic in the first level of Halo 1, of Halo Combat Evolved, than ever happens in Destiny. And I don't understand how a company allows that to happen. I don't understand how that first level of Halo feels bigger, more exciting, more dynamic, and more different within one level than the entire scope of the Destiny experience.
No, I think the beta then did you a disservice, because I think if you go back and listen to this podcast when we both played the beta, we talked about how cool it was, how it puts you down in this world, and you just already went through it. So when you got the full game, there wasn't wonder, and you'd already played it 8 times at E3, and you've experienced those opening levels. So I think maybe the fault is on Bungie for showing you
I want to clarify here because this is important for me. I actually have never touched Destiny at an event and did not play the alpha or beta specifically because I thought I would be reviewing it and did not want, I wanted to go in fresh. I didn't want that feeling of like, that being tainted of feeling of like, I've already played this thing 5 times and now I have to play it again. This is frustrating. So I went in completely fresh. But I still felt like there's just not enough to the game. The there's 4 worlds, right? And those 4 worlds aren't that big.
Yeah. And the fact that you get,
they give you 5 story missions in each one and you're going through, you're exploring parts of those worlds that you've already explored in every one of those missions.
Right. And you spawn at the exact same spot every time you beam down, which why do they do that? That doesn't make any sense. It feels, I jump in with friends, and again, I will say, tons of fun blasting stuff. The weapons feel cool. Everything looks awesome. I have a great time blasting aliens with my laser pistols. I dig it. I love it. They know how to make a very great feeling shooter with cool bad guys, and there's tons of stuff that is really fun. But when a friend jumps on and goes, hey, man, have you done the mission where you do this? I don't know if I can tell him that, yes, I have, or no, I haven't. I honestly don't know, because every mission is exactly the same and there's nothing distinctive. And then when you start the mission and you beam down and you go, I don't remember because I beamed down to this exact spot like 3 other times and I don't know. And the fact that the coolest part of the game for me when I was jumping into this idea is that it's going to be this sort of pseudo MMO experience. While they never used that moniker, they were, you know, talking about raids. They were talking about comparing the game to WoW Endgame in a lot of ways. And these strikes where you were going to go fight a monster was going to be really exciting and really challenging. I was in for all that. But there is literally nothing dynamic about those fights. It is just throwing enemies at you and this one big monster that's a sponge for all your ammo. There is nothing comparable to MMO fights in the sense of asking you to work as a team. Like, go ahead.
It's like an MMO fight. And I know, Jeff, you and I both have played a lot of World of Warcraft. We've played a lot of very good and very bad MMO boss fights. This is like the most simplistic MMO mechanics of it's just like, give that person a lot of damage, watch out for the adds, and avoid the AoE blasts. And that's right. Every single boss in Destiny. There's almost never anything else to add to that.
Sure. Right. But I don't understand how you can sit here and say, and one, this game has faults for sure. And I'm not saying it doesn't. But I don't understand how you can sit here and say how much fun you're having with the game, and then, Phil, this isn't, you know, to you specifically, because I know Jeff's the one saying he's having fun with the game, but I don't know how people can talk about how much fun they're having with the game and then give it a 4 or a 6 or whatever. Or like I put up a, quote, review on Instagram where it's like, here's my review of Destiny. The game's already out and you've played over 20 hours of it. Who cares? Like, I don't...
Because
like,
it is more fun than it is good. It's a fun game that is not good. Like, the,
but that's,
there are literally...
That's great.
There are literally monster closets. There are doors that have mist over them that only exist to have monsters jump out of them.
I will say for the sake of Polygon's review, a 6 for us, a 6 on the Polygon scale basically means this is a game that some people are going to have fun with, but you should know what you're getting into because there are some problems. For us, that totally falls into that range of like, you might really have fun with this, but also it has some issues. Here's what those issues are.
Which is totally, totally fair point. And I think, Jeff, some of your critiques are great. And for me, you know, one, this game is so much more fun playing with friends than it is playing alone. And to some extent, I think because it almost forces that on you. I've had a really great time. I've played with people from Australia, from the UK. You know, we played together, Jeff, after we had some, there are problems, like getting our headset synced and working and the volumes correct and stuff like that. But I also, granted, this is a huge company. This is Activision-backed Bungie making this game. But it's still a first attempt at a franchise that is wholly new to them. And while I know that Bungie did not in any way make Halo 4, but Jeff, I think you need to go back and listen to some of the times when you talked about the old Halo games. Halo 4 is the only one I remember because it's the most recent, where you're like, this game is shoot stuff, run and push a button, shoot stuff, run and push a button. And if you look back at old Halo games, they were Halo 1 especially, and I know Halo Defense Force is going to jump all over me for this, but Halo 1, what we remember Halo 1 the way we remember Saturday Night Live. We're like,
dude,
oh my God.
Dude, you're so wrong.
That game is mostly crap and the same texture being repeated in the same hallway with the few awesome open fights. And all we remember are the awesome open fights and not the library. What a crappy level.
Yes, the library is a crappy level. But there is nothing like those awesome open fights in Destiny.
Shut up. There are. We played one together. We were playing the same game, and we were in the same game with Dave, and we were talking about how fun it was, and you were like, oh, they held this back from the beta, and Dave was like, awesome, and then I died, and you respawned me, and we beat the guy, and it was great. It was great.
Here's what I will say.
Sorry, Zach,
I'm
peaking my audio.
I'm not the biggest Halo guy, so I'm not gonna defend that necessarily, but Halo compared to Destiny, I would say the big difference for me is that Halo's enemies actually have AI.
Well, I think there's some fun AI happening in Destiny. I think the fights aren't as dynamic, and maybe they're going to add more stuff into that world and, you know, widen things out and add new planets that have that. But why does it have to feel like a rough draft in the first release? Why can't we actually have a game that feels complete, like feels that there is stuff to do and there are things to explore and it's not the same level over and over? I don't understand how this could be released like this.
I think, and someone posted this in the chat, I'm going to scroll up to find his name, Ancelus, you know, does the hype train of the internet oftentimes ruin games? And I think it does. I think
that is a cop out. That is a total cop out.
It's not. And I think, and I know that sites are going to keep having reviews and we're going to keep giving impressions. I mean, people like impressions. And I know sites will keep doing reviews because it's oftentimes some of their biggest traffic and, you know, they're all businesses and they want to stay in business or whatever. But I think, you know, more and more in this gen and the end of last gen, like reviews just disappoint me time and time again.
We're not indicting reviews right here. And I think that is obfuscating the point that I'm trying to make. And it bothers me that you can just slough off something as, well, your expectations were too high. No, my expectations weren't too high. I had an expectation of a game giving me a dynamic experience that is more than the same thing repeated over and over and over. Now, I will apply that to a game I've heard nothing about, and I'll apply that to a game I've heard tons about. I'm applying my feeling of what fun, exciting, interesting, long-lasting appeal is for a game. I think the mechanics of this game are extremely fun, and I continue to play it because I have a good time with my friends. But I'm not going to just excuse its shortcomings because it's the first in a series or because I had an expectation. No, I had an expectation for a game to be good based on what good games are. And good games are no longer the kinds of games where enemies just miraculously spawn on top of me for no reason. Good games aren't creating this grand story and then telling me to go offline to read the... I'm so mad about games... confusing lore with story. They're not the same thing. Lore is not story. Lore is backstory. story. Lore is history. That is not the story of what's happening. My character, such as he is, does nothing of impact in the course of Destiny. I can't even tell you his story. In fact, I play as they're called the Chosen or something like that. The glowy dudes. And one of the major plot points in the game is going and sort of discovering them. But I'm one of them. How does that make any sense? Like, there's a completely incoherent story here. And what story that they want is confused, is muddled with lore. And it's, I think, a uniquely bad problem with science fiction, where for some reason they're so obsessed with what happened before that they're not giving you anything that's happening now. And Halo kind of fell into that problem as it went on. But the first Halo is about a dude being awesome. I want to be a dude being awesome in the now, and that's an interesting story. I'll stop my rant now. Tell me why I'm angry.
I don't know if you guys could hear.
Can I read something from the chat?
Yes.
Go ahead.
OMG Laser says, the problem to me is that the game was positioned as an MMO FPS, and it's not good as either. There isn't enough content for the MMO side, and there aren't enough interesting firefights on the FPS side. So I agree with this.
Agreed.
100%. I think for me, the biggest problem with Destiny is that. It's that it has the basic structure of both an MMO and an FPS, but it does not fulfill the requirements that I think would make it good in either of those genres. So it just ends up feeling like this really empty thing. I do think that they have the structure. I think they have the foundation there to build something better, and whether that happens in, you know, updates and expansion packs, or whether it's sequels, I don't know, but I'm hopeful they still can build something good out of this. But I think it's a ways from that.
Build something good out of it. Shovel Knight is widely well reviewed, but two of the games that I've had the most fun with, well, my three favorite games, leaving Shovel Knight out, that I had the most fun with are Infamous, Counter Spy, and Destiny. And I just feel like we get hung up on, and granted, this game, Destiny, has problems, but I think we're reviews, and I am going to indict reviews some, because people do rely on them. And I know people that didn't play Counter Spy because it was getting trashed in reviews, and then they played it and they're like, hey, Spicer, I'm glad you talked about it on DLC. I'm really enjoying it. While I see its shortcomings, I'm really enjoying it. And I think there's so much fun to be had with Destiny. I just hate the fact, and granted, this could be solved if people read reviews, but let's be honest. Now I'm going to blame the audience. I'm blaming everyone but the game.
Right. That's one problem with this.
The game has faults. But the game is fun. And for people just to sit here and be like, yeah, it's a really, really, really fun game. And I think we just need to let go, as someone was in the chat, you know, let it go. Just let it go and just let's play games. Let's adopt Reggie's philosophy and play the games and have fun with them.
Here's my problem. I don't disagree with what you're saying. I understand where you're coming from on this. But I think attacking reviews from that perspective is silly, because that's literally what we are paid to be, critics. There was somebody attacking the co-writer of my review, Arthur Geese, the reviews editor at Polygon. Somebody attacking him on Twitter this weekend, saying like, you know, like, when you were a kid, did you pick through Mario Brothers looking for something, like looking for the negatives or looking to be critical about it? And it's like, I understand where that's coming from. And as just an average gamer, that's okay. Literally, our job is to criticize that. It is what we are being paid for. It is the point of reviews. It is to be critical. It is to look at things deeper than just that surface level of like, well, this is kind of fun, so 10 out of 10.
I'm just saying, if I go to a friggin' restaurant and they hand me a hot dog and it's a plain hot dog on a bun, and I go, you know what? I friggin' love hot dogs. Hot dogs are delicious. This hot dog is delicious. Well-made hot dog. It's got all the right lips and anuses, everything I want in a hot dog. It's in there. But why didn't you put some freaking mustard on here? Anybody who sells me a hot dog knows enough to put some friggin' mustard on a hot dog. You know what? A little ketchup wouldn't hurt either. Maybe some onions. All those things that make hot dogs phenomenal, I should be able to point out and go, it's a good hot dog, but it could have been a friggin' great hot dog. And you're a company that makes great hot dogs.
I guess here's Jeff.
I want to say two. One, don't put ketchup on hot dogs, you monster. Two, I would really like, if Bungie is listening, on the Game of the Year edition of Destiny, on the box on the front, you put, "It has all the right lips and anuses," quote Jeff Cannata.
Well, according to you guys, it will never be a Game of the Year edition because you both hate everything. I'm kidding.
That's exactly true.
Wait, we're taking a break.
No, this is a break.
I'm making a point, and then you can do whatever you want, but you're not
pre-breaking. Listen, you have the show next week. You can do whatever you want.
Nope.
Go ahead.
Right now. It's happening. Right now. I feel like maybe I'm ewing this episode, where I agree with a lot of your criticisms, but where I didn't want this conversation to go, and where it went anyway, is this game is such a disappointment, and you reload the conversation with all the disappointment, and then at the end it's, oh yeah, by the way, I've played it for 30 hours and really enjoyed it. I just want people, and I feel like the reviews are kind of loaded that way too, the few that I've read, and I just want people to lead with, this is fun. You can have so much fun with this game. In your course, if you're having fun, here are things that could make it funner. I know funner is not a real word.
That's what I said. That's exactly what I said.
No,
that's
what I started with.
No, you listen to the tape back. You listen to the tape back, Christian Spicer.
I'm not going to listen to this episode. I'm in this episode. I know it's good.
I said it was extremely fun. I said it. The first thing I said was, it's more fun than it is good. It is fun to shoot stuff with your friends. They built a really tight shooting mechanic. They built really fun guns. I said all that stuff. I love how they name bad guys. I love fighting Fogoth the Untamed. I think that's awesome. There's a lot of really cool things about this game. It's beautiful. I think the menu system is fantastic. I think the equipment that I get is really exciting and fun. I love the fact that green items have cool upgrades that I have to earn by using them, but then affect my gameplay in really interesting ways. They're not just like +2 to strength or whatever. It's actually something that has significant impact on how I shoot. But it really bugs me that all three freaking classes, and there's only three classes, which is ridiculous, but all three classes are basically the same. There's nothing dynamic or interesting about choosing one class above another, or having a loadout in your team that includes one of each class. It bears no relevance on your success or fail. There's so much here that even a casual glance at what they're trying to achieve reveals that they did not achieve it. And I can't just gloss over that. And really, the only reason this conversation went the way it did is because you started attacking the review of a game rather than the game itself. I had a whole list of stuff here that I wanted to talk about how good it is, but there's so much stuff that frustrates me about it, too.
I forgot to mention Wolfenstein. That's a great game. You should play that. It's better than Destiny.
All right. I'm taking a break because I'm all worked up. We have to thank our sponsor, Squarespace, who loves it when we break away from yelling at each other to talk about their product. Squarespace, honestly, is something I use every single day. JeffCannata.com was built on Squarespace, is housed on Squarespace, is updated using Squarespace. I really, really dig it. And the reason I dig it is because it makes making a website easy, fast, simple, and elegant. It makes beautiful websites very quickly. Any reason you might have to have a website, if you have a blog, if you want to put your like personal portfolio up on a website, or if you want to sell something, Squarespace makes it really easy to square something. They also make it easy to square something, to sell something. And I don't mean just like, you know, you have a company that sells shoes. I'm talking about if you want to make a quick website to have a bake sale for your school. If you have want to do a quick website to sell something one time, and you know, it's so easy that it makes it the smartest way to make a website. They have beautiful design templates, so you're making something that looks great, but the ease of altering those templates, it's all what you see is what you get, drag and drop, so you can make something that doesn't look cookie cutter, it doesn't look like every other Squarespace website. They've got 24/7 support to live chat and email, which makes it very easy. You don't have to worry about not knowing something. They're going to help you out. I have used that before personally. It makes it very simple. You get a response really quickly. And the online store, as I was talking about, comes with every website that you build. So even if you're not using it, you've still got the functionality right in there. It's just drag and drop. You build the commerce right into the website and you can sell stuff. Super cool. Plans are inexpensive. They start at only $8 a month and they come with a free domain name if you sign up for a year. And if you do decide to sign up for Squarespace, check this out. You can try it out for free without even having to enter in your credit card number. They'll just let you do it, give it a test drive, build your site without even having to put in any kind of credit card. So you're not going to get charged without you knowing. And then if you do decide you want to keep it, we'll give you an extra 10% off if you use our promo code. You have to go to squarespace.com/DLC. That's squarespace.com/DLC. And then plug in the promo code Jeff sent me. So if you do JeffSentme, Jeff sent me as your promo code, we'll give you 10% off your first purchase and you'll show your support for DLC and you'll let us rant at each other for weeks and years to come. Thank you to Squarespace for supporting the show. I really dig their service and I hope you guys give it a shot. Squarespace.com/DLC and the promo code Jeff sent me. Okay, I dip into the phone calls, guys. We're going to see. I'm sure people have some strong opinions. See if anybody has anything else they've been wanting, been playing, or if they have some feedback on this. I got somebody from the 315 area code. What is your name? Where are you calling from? And what's on your playlist?
Hey, how's everything going, guys?
It's good. We're just hanging out.
Go ahead. Yeah, all right. DLC is Destiny Loathing Kanata this week. I've been playing Destiny like you guys, and I agree with a lot of what you both said. All three of you said, actually. I was fighting your boy Fulgok last night, and what's that?
Nothing. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. It cut out on me. I was in a fire team with two other guys. There were mobs of guys coming at us, and that's when Destiny started losing its luster to me. I mean, I don't care about the story stuff. For the world, it's still a pretty fun shooter, but man, grinding on that for like a half hour and not being able to beat him really kind of soured my opinion of it. So we'll see how much I play the next couple weeks. But beyond that, it's been mostly Phoenix Wright and Professor Layton on the DS. The only other thing I've been playing.
I agree with you. That's kind of where I turned my opinion on DLC as well is, you know, after dying the 15th time on one of those bosses where you're 20 minutes in and he's down to a sliver of health and something stupid happens and you all go down and then you have to start all the way over. And yes, that happens in lots of games and it happens in lots of MMOs, but for some reason here, because you're just plugging away on this redundant fight over and over, it just weighs more heavily, I think. Did either of you guys play the new Phoenix Wright Professor Layton jam?
I did not.
No? Yeah, so, I haven't. I'm way behind on the Phoenix Wright series. I'm like two or three games now behind, so I didn't want to jump in on that one yet.
We're blowing up on the phones, guys. So I'm going to try to take a couple of more. I got somebody from the 401 area code. What is your name? Where are you calling from? And what's on your playlist?
Hey, this is Casey, repeat caller from Tampa, Florida. I also agree with most of what you folks said about Destiny. What I will also say, though, is much like the rest of you folks, I am still seriously playing it. I just hit the the level 20 cap, and now it's a little funky. I've been paying attention to what Polygon has been saying about how it's going after 20. But yeah, storyline wise, I'm a storyline person. I love games like Mass Effect and all of that, and this is just lackluster when you compare it to those. But somehow, some way, Bungie has still got people playing it, and for a while, we'll see how long it lasts. It's really fun.
Are you somebody that goes to the Bungie.net website to check out the grimoires that you've been collecting?
I tried that using the Destiny, what do you call it, the companion app. So far, It's like you folks said in the past, it's kind of very lore-based almost, and there's a lot of information there, but nothing is really clear. You know, even the in-game credits you collect, I've collected a whole bunch. I still have not gotten the bug to be able to buy something and say, oh yeah, this helped. It's just a lot of collection. And you end up getting the gun that you wanted out hunting anyway. There's no need to buy anything. It's just, so far, it's almost like we're hoping that Bungie kind of sends the next patch level that kind of, you know, puts all the puzzle pieces together. And until then, it's kind of a hodgepodge.
Yeah, I agree. I have this awesome story I want to tell you guys. It's written over here in this book, the Encyclopedia Britannica. That's this awesome story I want to tell you. Yeah, it bugs me. All right, we'll take a couple more calls. I don't mean to... I like how everybody's like, I agree with all of you. It's like, no, you can't.
Yeah, you can't. You can't.
How about 989? You are on the line. What's your name? Where are you calling from? And what's on your playlist?
This is cool. First time caller. I'm from Michigan. And I'm actually at work. I have another person coming in soon, so I got to be quick. I agree with Christian more than Jeff, which is weird. But I do. I think it's super fun. I really want to play it right now. I love my companion app. It's fun to play. I read reviews, and then I'm like, oh, yeah, the story does suck. Yeah, I don't want to go and read more lore. But yet I get home, and I'm like, I just want to play a strike. Super fun. I want a new carrot on the stick or whatever it may be.
Yeah, I would like to say, just for the record, that I'm happy if you dig this game. I'm not trying to convince anybody not to like it at all. I that's the way I always feel. If I'm disappointed by something, it doesn't mean you have to be. And if you're getting more joy out of something, I'm happy for you. I wish I was you. I want to be the guy who's unabashedly excited about it. And yeah, if Heroes of the Storm didn't exist, I'd probably be still, you know, playing daily Destiny. But I find myself less inclined to jump in because I just find the experience to be a little hollower than I was hoping for. Anybody else want to weigh in on that?
No, like I said, I understand why callers are saying they agree with all of us because I do share your criticisms. But like this caller just said, I just find it's just fun. It's just fun to play for a little bit. And yeah, of course, we're never looking to try to talk someone into spending money or out. You know, like my goal is to never be like, you definitely need to buy this game, or hey, don't buy this game, you idiot. I didn't like it. Oh, Jeff loved Rogue Legacy. I only think it's kind of okay. If you buy it, we're no longer going to be friends. Like that's like, you know, we discuss the pros and cons. And if you don't buy Counter Spy and Destiny, you're an idiot. I mean, that's what it boils down to.
I want to hear a little bit about ArcheAge because I know that's, it either just came out or is coming out. And Phil, you've been playing that. It's a new MMO. Speaking of MMOs.
Yeah.
You dig it?
Yeah. So ArcheAge is, it's currently out if you're in the Head Start. Otherwise it releases, tomorrow. It's new free to play MMO from Trion. It's been out in Korea for quite a while and now it's coming to the US. But, I saw this at a couple of different preview events. I played a little bit of the beta, and I wasn't really sold on it. But then I jumped into the Head Start version of the game Friday night, and it completely blew me away.
Wow.
Jackal in the chat is pointing out, ArcheAge is kind of bananas, player-owned plots of land, player-run court systems. It's super weird. It is a weird game. It is much more than the average MMO. I mean, it's still got like quests and still got the like funneling you through a world like you'd expect from a World of Warcraft style MMO, but it's all building towards this stuff where you can buy your own land. You pay taxes on the land. You decide what type of house you want to build. You decide what type of crops you want to plant. It's got incredibly deep crafting system.
Wow.
So many different types of crafting, so much weird stuff. If you commit a crime, like let's say you go onto someone else's farm and dig up their plants, you actually get put on trial in a public trial chat room, and it's the jury is made up of other players.
Wow.
And they decide whether you're guilty or innocent and what your sentence is going to be. And if you're guilty, you go to jail and you have to spend X amount of time in jail in the game.
Crazy.
SpaceWob asks if there's a subscription fee. So it's free to play. There is a subscription option, and you get some benefits. So part of the way the game works is in order to do any crafting or do any like cutting down trees or harvesting plants, you use something called labor points.
Okay.
If you're a free-to-play player, your labor points only renew while you're logged in. If you have a subscription, your labor points are renewing all the time, even if you're logged out. So there's benefits to subscribing. There's special things that you get, and you're going to be able to do more often. But you can play completely free to play.
How's the combat system?
The combat's really interesting. It's all based around, so you choose one class at the beginning from a group of like 9, I think. And then when you hit level 5 and level 10, you choose a second and a third class. And then once you have all three of these chosen, it gives you a special, a class name based on those three choices. So there's a special class name for all of those combinations. It's something like 100-150 combos or something. And then it's all based around building combos in combat based off of those classes. So you might have somebody who does like a combo, like your warrior class has something where they rush at an enemy, so you can use that to open a combo. And then you can use like a rogue attack where you do a bunch of damage close range. And that all builds into combos that are going to get you more damage.
That sounds interesting. Sounds a little bit like Guild Wars or Terra.
Yeah, it's along those lines. It's probably not quite, it's probably more along Guild Wars than Terra. It's not quite as action-y as Terra.
Okay.
But it's also got the Terra style of you can have just tons of abilities at once.
Awesome. A bunch of my buddies are talking about it, so I might give this one a whirl, although I'm out of the country for the next 2 weeks, but
I'm really surprised by it, and the user created stuff seems like it's gonna take a while to see how it all shakes out. But it seems like it's going to be really interesting. Also, heavy PvP focus. So, and I'm not usually into MMOs that are PvP focused, but so far this one's doing it for me.
Christian, you got any other things on your playlist other than Destiny?
I've been going back to Velocity still. I talked about it last week, Velocity 2X. I should have had the name right before I said it. playing into my stereotype, it's a really, really good game to have on the Vita. The levels are short. I have my Vita with me in my car. You know, LA is a car city, but I'm often out all day with meetings or whatever's, and, you know, have time to kill between them because I'm not going to go the 2 miles home because that's an hour's worth of driving. so I'll pop into Velocity, and it's fun, and, you know, it burns that time perfectly. And also, I've championed this game before, and the new table is great. The Walking Dead table for Zen Pinball, or whatever version of that pinball you have, is a really cool table. And as scary as a pinball table could be, it manages to capture it well. I think some of their, branded tables can sometimes be misses in terms of how they utilize the brand. But I think a lot of their Star Wars stuff is great. And the Walking Dead table is another really great table if you've enjoyed that game. Check it out. It's the physics are still the same. They remained unchanged. It's a really cool addition. Hopefully we'll see more of them. I liked it. So that's kind of what's been keeping me busy.
Awesome. I have been still playing tons of Heroes of the Storm. There was a new patch that came out this week, and it's awesome. A huge UI update, a new character Chen, who is this crazy weird panda from World of Warcraft that drinks brew and spews brew on enemies to slow them, and then can ignite that on fire, and also will split into three essences, so you have actually three characters on the screen at the same time you control as his uber move. Really cool.
Jeff, should I play that game?
Do you like MOBAs?
Yeah, I've just recently been pushing myself to get into League of Legends and Dota over the last like 6 months or so, and I've grown in appreciation for them. But I love not tried Heroes of the Storm yet.
Well, if you have a code, not a code. They don't have codes, but if your account has been flagged to be able to play it, you should give it a shot. I was in the same boat. I was like, well, I'm going to try League of Legends or Dota. I haven't decided which one, but I'm going to try one. And then I got into Heroes of the Storm, and I love it. It plays much faster than either of those two games, so your rounds are shorter. The team leveling I find to be much less much less something that will cause infighting and strife, because I'm not worried about last hits on anybody, and I'm not worried about stealing someone's kill or knowing all those ground rules that people have to have. But the team fights are extremely fun, and I think this game engenders more team fights and quicker team fights because of the map mechanic. So if you have a traditional MOBA like Dota or League, you have to really maintain your lanes, and there's some of that in Heroes of the Storm, but much more often you'll find that you'll group up very quickly, and only the very beginning of a round you have to do any laning. And then you group up, and now you're doing these awesome combos of playing in a team, as a team, helping people out, using your skills to aid them, they using their skills to aid you. And I find that extremely addictive. The graphics are way beyond anything that either Dota or League is doing right now, I believe, in my opinion. And I'm such a Blizzard fanboy that I dig having all those characters and knowing those characters and stuff. I also am enjoying seeing how the game evolves. It's really fun right now, and I think it's only going to get more fun as it gets balanced. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So in the short, yes, you should try it. And if you do, we need to play together because it's ridiculously fun.
Sure.
The other game I wanted to bring up quickly is a iOS game called Photonica. It was out on PC a while back, but I never played it there. It works really, really well as an iPad game. I've been playing it on iPad. You can play it on your phone as well. And this is a game that is really right up my alley in the kinds of like niche games that I dig. It's got a very Mirror's Edge vibe to it, but the graphics are all almost like the old Star Wars trench game from when I was a kid. It's all line vector graphics with no textures on anything, just all wireframes. And it's first person, you're running, and you are trying to maintain as much speed as you can in order to make these huge leaps. And the reason it's so great on iPad is that you put your thumb or finger anywhere on the screen and hold it down to run. To jump, all you do is you take your finger off the screen, and then you put your finger back on to force a landing. So you can it's all about timing your landing at the right time to land on these platforms. But you have to like get all this momentum to make these incredibly long leaps. It's exactly what I loved about a story about my uncle earlier this year as well, which is a fantastic game. I love that feeling of momentum and flinging myself and that sense in first person that I'm just making these grand jumps. And this game is really, really fun. It's got a cool soundtrack. It was only, I think, $2 on iOS, and I dig it. I really dig it.
Did you ever play Ollie Ollie, Jeff?
No, I remember you talking about it a lot, but I never did.
It's not definitely not first person, and it becomes frustrating with the precise controls. It's kind of like Super Meat Boy in the sense that it's tight, but you'll die a lot. But it has the same thing where the game is really about momentum, and what I think adds a fun layer to its version on a runner is you have to land your tricks and as precise as you can. Sometimes you'll wipe out, and other times you'll get, okay, that was fine, and if you get it just right, it'll be perfect, and you'll actually get a little speed boost from it, and then you can link things and keep things chaining. And when those systems are done right, yeah, they're so great. It just feels like, I don't know how, you just get in that zone, and it feels like you're moving with it, and everything is clicking. And so that sounds really cool.
Well, we're running long a little bit, but let's jump right into tabletop time. Phil, you aren't much of a board gamer, right?
No, I it's one of those areas that I'm like super interested in, but have never, I haven't yet found the time to really get to do it.
Well, I wanted to bring up an interesting game that I played this week. It's a different one, man. It's called Manhattan Project. It's a really strange theme. It is literally about trying to create nuclear bombs and then test those nuclear bombs. So it's kind of dark, and it's even more dark when you consider that you are competing against other people who are also trying to build test facilities to create nuclear bombs. And you can create, you can invest in your own air strike fleet, your air power to bomb their test facilities with non-nuclear bombs, with regular bombs, to set them back, to prevent them from being able to use those facilities. Very strange, and in a lot of ways, you know, kind of disturbing. But if you set that aside and buy into it, it's a really kind of interesting game. It's a worker placement game. So you're taking workers and you're putting them on certain spots in order to activate that action. But it works a little differently than most worker placement games in the sense that you are taking these workers and in order to set them out, there's different types of workers. There's scientists and construction workers and regular sort of generic workers, and each can do different things. And you're trying to maximize as much of the time that you can of activating them before you have to pull them back. And if you're out of workers, then you have to pull them all back in order to resend them out. So it's all about trying to use workers to get other workers to then make it so that you don't have to pull anybody back for as long as you can, to sort of outpace your opponents. And like a lot of these games, that's about efficiency. So you're trying to create a chain of moves that will be more efficient than somebody else. And you're investing in plutonium and uranium, and you're building facilities that can create certain resources that'll let you buy other facilities and let you create plutonium and uranium. And these typical you know, worker placement type factory building games. The art is really cool. It's very art deco. It's very much of the time period when we were in that kind of race to create nuclear weapons. And I found it to be a really interactive, pretty fun game, as long as you can get past the idea that, you know, making nuclear bombs is kind of grisly, because it's like, yeah, the winner of the game created the most potent nuclear bomb and now has that bomb. I mean, there's no nationality that you're representing. You're just sort of the industry of it. But it's a pretty interesting game, and I really liked the mechanics, and I loved the board artwork. Again, that is called The Manhattan Project, and was a board game that I played this week. In the next couple of weeks, I am going to be gone. I'm actually heading off to get married in Italy. My fiance and I are running off, just the two of us, to Italy and getting married there. And we're staying for our honeymoon. So I'll be gone for the next two episodes of DLC and leaving the show in the capable hands of one Christian Spicer.
Destiny loves company.
But I was very worried that we would not have tabletop time on the Christian episodes. So what I've done is I got a couple of really awesome board gaming guests that actually wouldn't have been able to be on the show at our normal recording time. So this was a bonus in two ways. It was a win-win because they were able to pre-record segments for the show with me, and I was able to have them on the show because, you know, they wouldn't be able to be here. And we also get tabletop time episodes, and they're both really excellent. I recorded them just in the last couple of days, one with Quentin Smith from Shut Up and Sit Down show. I think he'll be on next week. And then the following week, Rob Davio, the designer of Risk Legacy and Betrayal at House on the Hill and a lot of other cool games. So really, really cool guys, awesome conversation. So you'll have that to look forward to. So there will be tabletop time, even in my absence.
Little does Jeff know, all I've been doing is playing tabletop games to prepare for his absence.
Awesome. So get excited for that. I think, Christian, you're going to have a good time without me. Try not to break the show completely.
Promise accepted.
All right, so stick around, guys. We still do have the parting gift to give you at the end of the show. But Phil, this has been awesome. You're always one of the best guests we have, and I dig your stuff so much. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. Tell the people where they can find your cool Steam Friends Twitch stream and anything else that you'd like to plug.
Sure. I'm over on Twitter at twitter.com/pkoller. That's P-K-O-L-L-A-R. If you want to check out the Stream Friends, we're on twitch.tv/streamfriends. That's where we do live stuff. Or you can go to streamfriends.tv, and that'll take you to our YouTube channel, so you can check out all of our archives. And then, of course, my reviews are over on polygon.com.
Awesome. Christian, you will be here next week. But in the meantime, what are you up to?
I will be here next week. I am at Spicer on Twitter. And if you're listening to this live or Monday or in LA, tomorrow is the next What's New at Nerdmelt, which is my live stand-up comedy show slash podcast on the Nerdist Network. So it'll be a live show that'll be recorded and go out as a podcast the next week. That is Tuesday at Nerdmelt in Los Angeles, if you are in town for that. And the end of this month, I believe it's the 25th or 26th, I will be at the Salt Lake City Comedy Carnival, where the show I created and do at UCB here in New York, Improv versus Stand-Up. We're headlining a night of that festival, and I will be doing a couple of longer stand-up sets, too. So if you're in the Salt Lake area, you can find me there. If not, you can find me not playing Destiny, because I haven't had that much fun with it, but... If you see me on my Vita, come say hi.
Well, I, as I said, won't be here the next 2 weeks. I will miss all of you. I want to thank everybody who called in. I'm sorry we weren't able to get to a lot of the calls that we had this week. But I am really grateful, Christian, that you will be able to make episodes next week and the following week while I'm gallivanting all through the European countryside.
Yeah,
and
dude, have fun. If the show breaks, don't even think about it.
Yeah. Okay. Please don't break the show. And thanks to Zach, as always, for his awesome production on the show. Thanks to all of you guys. Please check out We Have Concerns over at wehaveconcerns.com. It's another show that I do. Also the /filmcast over at /film.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeff Cannata with two N's and one T. As promised, we got a parting gift for you, something outside the box that we've been enjoying. Phil, do you have any recommendations you'd like to share with the gang?
This is just anything not anything related to games, right?
Yeah.
Sure. I will throw out, this is not a new recommendation by any means, but something that I rediscovered this week watching with my fiance. You guys seen Zodiac, the movie Zodiac?
Oh yeah, yes. Great. David Fincher.
The movie is so damn good. If for any reason you have not seen it, I discovered my fiance had not seen it and was like, we need to go watch this right now. So we spent the last two nights. We had to split it into two nights because it's so long. But we spent the last two nights watching it and just remembered how much I really love and adore that movie. You know, not necessarily like the best or most accurate retelling of the true story of the Zodiac Killer, but an incredible film, very much worth watching.
Cool. How about you, Christian? You got a recommendation?
Again, apologies for this being an LA-centric thing. Actually, I think he's streaming some of it, but a wonderful comedian and funny dude. He's on the 49ers and not the 49ers, the 9 to 5ers. It's a show on Hulu. Moses Storm. He kickstarted this thing called The Modern Millennial, which was a live-in art exhibit thing where he lives and you can come by, and it's kind of weird and it's kind of jokey, but also kind of the most serious and amazing art installation you've ever seen. And it's happening now. He raised the money and he's doing it. He's living in it. It's, you know, maybe an extension of Shia LaBeouf's I'm Not Famous art project, but also making fun of it, but also super serious. And you can just go by and hang out with Moses and do whatever. And it'll be both the weirdest / coolest thing you probably do that day. And if you're in LA, I can't recommend checking it out enough. It is so bizarre / awesome / what a waste of time. And it's Modern Millennial with Moses Storm. And it's the type of performance art that is both worthless and so important.
That's cool,
it's,
man.
It's really cool.
I just want to mention this because I haven't mentioned it in a long time. I recommend going outside because we, as geeks, can also have a fun, balanced life out of doors. And I'm a big fan of putting geeks in sneaks and recommending people get outside, do something, maybe go for a run. Or a light jog, or even a walk to get that blood pumping and, you know, be a little healthy and get some exercise. It's fantastic. I am so thrilled with so many people who have sent me their Geeks and Sneaks success stories. Like, a guy this week sent me a picture of a before and after of him. All he started doing was running a few times a week, and started slow, and now he's lost so much weight and just make himself so happy. And it's a thing that we as geeks can do more of. We can get put on those sneaks and have a cool outdoor experience. And if you want some motivation, why not throw a cool podcast in your ear holes, or maybe even an audiobook, like my audiobook, Traveling in Space.
Plugs are over.
All right. Traveling in Space on audible.com. Go check it out. All right, guys. I'm not anxious to end this show because I'm not going to be here for 2 weeks, but I hope you guys have a great time in my absence. And until I'm back, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.